You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast. Matt Preem, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on this post-game edition as Jared waves at the invisible camera. I don't know how to explain this one. Oregon needed to score multiple times in the fourth quarter. They scored 29 points. They come from behind to almost an upset, but it feels like one. Washington State, 44-41. Oregon was the favorite team, but there's a lot to break down. Bad plays, heroic efforts, just an overall... This was a damn good football game by two really good teams, and it's unfortunate one of them had to lose, unfortunately.
We're talking about this in the walkover. I can't think of a crazier Oregon win in quite a long time.
Yeah.
Probably not since, was that ASU a long time ago?
Oh, yeah, with Vernon Adams. That's a good one. We forgot about that one in terms of, that was pretty similar.
That was an overtime walk-off
rally.
I'm not sure which one was crazier.
That was 2015.
Mariota's game-winning drive against Oregon State in 2013.
That was a good one, yeah.
That was a crazy one. It's
been a while.
It's up there.
Let's just break this down where our confidence level was. I tweeted out with like 6 minutes to go after Oregon was stopped on that, was a three and out, and had a punt. I was like, there's just not a lot of time. It doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel like it's going to happen. And then Oregon scores a touchdown with Cam McCormick, cuts it to one score, and it's kind of like, maybe everything has to go right. And then they get the stop, which is step one. They get the stop as we're walking on the field, by the way. We should note that. It was pretty cool being field level for this.
Yeah, very cool.
I mean, we talk about this being one of the best games in a long time. This is probably the first one I've been on the field and kind of just saw everything happen first person, like right there. And the plays that were made down the stretch were incredible. But just to kind of go back to my point, it was like, even when Oregon scored on the Troy Franklin 50-yard touchdown, there was like a minute 21 to go. Washington State's two timeouts. Oregon's only up three.
Felt like they scored too fast.
Yeah, kind of feeling like
a little bit.
I don't know, man. This is like, I'm not super confident. Oregon's defense has been pretty dicey at times. And then Mace Funa with the best play of his collegiate career, pick six. Feels like it ices it. It does. But then Washington State still scores again because, hey, if you bet.
Why not?
And if you bet this game, you've had 9 heart attacks and like 30 seconds because it was you were no way you were going to win this game. Oregon was down like what 12 points, and then it was like, oh my god, I'm going to win the bet because the line was 6 or 6.5, 7, and then at the last second you lose. So sorry. Tough day.
Sorry for those who bet on Oregon to win.
Tough day.
I don't really know where to begin with this one either. We got down onto the field as Oregon was making their defensive stop, like Eric mentioned. From there, it just kind of felt like a blur while also lasting nearly 30 minutes of actual time in real life.
Yep.
I mean, the Bo Nix conversion, we'll get to him just overall in a second, but
outstanding.
Troy Franklin on the 50-yard touchdown, seeing that on the field was great. It was a great environment. The Ducks fans really started to make noise. The Mace Funa pick six really just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think the first down, Ward threw it out just because he was rushed. Something I'd like to talk about later as well. But yeah. And then all of a sudden you looked up on second down, Ward dropped back, and then boom, interception, and then Mace was just walking into the end zone. Just a crazy game. I don't, like, I'll have to rewatch this one a couple times to really get what happened in the last 5 minutes. But Oregon walks out of here with a win. Something I don't know if any of us expected.
They're 3-1
when they're down by 12.
I mean, you scored 29 points in the fourth quarter. That's just bonkers.
After scoring, what is that, 15 all game long?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And over 1,000 yards of combined total offense, both quarterbacks combined.
Really good.
Just 20 incomplete passes total.
Yeah.
And most, you know, probably half of those for both of them were throwaways.
It's not like they were bad passes.
Yeah.
Honestly, there were two really bad plays made by quarterbacks. Both were interceptions. Both were for pick sixes.
Yep.
And it kind of just dawned on me that was the truth. That was the case. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Both teams had pick sixes. Bose felt really bad in the moment. Really impressed the way he bounced back. Unfortunately for Ward, there wasn't enough time to really make a bounce back. But I
he still kind of did. They still had the drive.
But they still, I mean, I got, yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah.
But my point is, like, I thought this was one of the better combined quarterback games I've covered in a while. I mean, you look at the numbers. This is not quite like Patrick Mahomes versus who's the Oklahoma quarterback in that one?
Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield.
Baker, yeah. In like it's 2016.
Not, yeah, it's not quite that level statistically where you have like a million yards passing. But Bo has a career high 428. Cam Ward has probably
close to a career high.
Well, it's definitely at Washington State high of 375 because coming in as high was 299. I don't know about stats and the FCS level incarnate word, maybe, but for both of them, I thought they were tremendous. And I mean, gamers, absolute gamers. Nick's, I think, maybe we should talk about that, him right now.
Cause yeah, go for it.
There's, you know, when Bo transferred here, it was, you weren't super excited. I wasn't super excited. Matt, I think you were lukewarm, but not super, not like jumping for joy about it. Just because the perception was, makes great plays, but the nickname Bo Picks is out there for a reason. And mm-hmm. I thought the way he battled throughout this one, they got down. He made one really bad play that cost the team. Other than that, not a lot you can point to say, it was his fault. And just the way he executed down the stretch, and they talked about it after the game, Troy Franklin and Bo Nix, kind of what the diagram, kind of what went behind that 50-yard touchdown. The play prior to it was one route, and the defense covered it a certain way, and Troy kind of, they didn't even have a conversation. This is what I was
thought. This
was,
is the crazy part.
It was kind of crazy. And they just kind of like instinctually communicated to each other, like, if, you know, and maybe it's just more of a read of like, if
the
safety
read of the defense,
opens
really.
His hips up, I'm going to have the open, you know, the middle part of the field is going to be open.
They're playing cover zero, is what Franklin said.
Exactly. And there's no, yeah, there's no safety really help there at all. And he makes the move. Nick puts it on the money. Franklin catches it, breaks tackle, gets in the end zone, and it's a touchdown. And I thought that was a fantastic play, but just kind of all the stuff that kind of goes behind it speaks to the veteran leadership of Nix, the way he kind of is cool under pressure, even though his reputation coming to Oregon was maybe he wouldn't be based upon the. I mean, we ran through the splits coming in. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
He's not, good on the road splits. Well, how about 33 for 44 for 428, three touchdowns and a pick? I'd take that.
I would too, with a 174 quarterback rating, nearly 175. He was just tremendous today. I mean, we'll go back in time in January, whenever he committed here, just lukewarm on it all. But he's been otherworldly at points for Oregon. His stats this season are just significantly better than any other season he's had.
Yeah.
And a quick digression, just holy cow, is Kenny Dillingham really good at calling plays? He's got just some,
except for in the
except
red
for
zone.
In the red zone with
we'll
the
get to that.
We'll
get, we have to, get to that.
But man, are they creative. Yeah. It's a fun offense to watch, and Nix at the helm of it is also very fun to watch. He's getting a lot of just open looks, and that is in part to Oregon's depth at wide receiver this year, where a lot of guys caught passes today. You had three guys nearly over 75 yards. This goes to their offensive line, who is now not allowed a sack for four straight weeks, which is very impressive.
Mad impressive against this defense.
Yeah, especially against this defense. There were points, but Nix, as a veteran quarterback, did a really good job of stepping up and throwing the ball away. I was going to go somewhere else, but now I can't.
you can.
I can, but I can't remember what I was going to say. But, oh, I got it. The fourth down and two pass to Bucky Irving over the middle, that was an absolute threat. It was just beautiful, and Oregon does not win that game without that pass. For the individual who, in my comments on Twitter, my mentions said, why did we run that play? It worked, but come on.
It worked. Who cares?
It worked. My response, it works. Come on.
It was a beautiful pass. It was.
Can I grab that monitor from you guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Here you are. It's about to die.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We had a tablet got left in here, but we'll continue, Jared.
Oh, yeah.
live podcasting at its finest.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, Nick's was just phenomenal today, and we'll get to the Dillingham play calling. But I thought other than the red zone, it was a lot of fun to watch.
There's one thing I wanted to say about Knicks. I don't know if we're ready to move on or not.
I have another Knicks thing too, but
I wish I had the yardage stats here, but I don't. It's too hard to add up in my head. In the fourth quarter with 6 minutes and 42 seconds to go, Oregon is down 34-22. He completed 9 of his 12 passes, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and I don't really think any of them were bad throws. To Eric's point about the reputation of kind of cracking under pressure at Auburn, this was a game in which it was a perfect example to see if he'd learned from that, if he'd grown from that. Is it the same Bo Nix? And I don't think he was phased at all by the moment. And he looked like what you would expect a four-year quarterback would look like. That's a five-star. All his throws were on the money. Jared's comment about the one on Bucky. I mean, I don't know if people realize how hard of a throw that is, because they're so spoiled of watching Herbert at Oregon and watching Herbert at the NFL level throw those dimes. Like, that's not normal. And what Bo did is pretty darn impressive. I think this one goes a long way in Oregon's tally book, and it goes a long way in that locker room for Bo Nix, because personally and with this team, I haven't had any doubts about him, but it just shows that he can be the guy.
Here was my next point I was going to make. When he transferred, in the back of the head, it was, okay, he has 2 years, but it's kind of seen as a negative thing, he has two years, because that's going to delay a Ty Thompson or Jay Butterfield or now Dante Moore, the five-star. Now I'm kind of going like,
I hope he comes back.
If he comes back, like, all right. That means that'd be the first time we're going to have some quarterback continuity since Herbert. And I know we're going way down the line here, but I'm just saying, when a quarterback performs this well and kind of passes the eye test like this, I come away kind of getting excited about, like, there could be 2 years of this, and Oregon's offense could be pretty darn good for
a while. Yeah, I hope he entertains the idea. At least seriously entertain it.
It didn't sound like coming in he would.
Yes.
Yeah. But we'll see. I'm just kind of putting that on the universe. Maybe it's not a bad thing he comes back, which I think a lot of people were not that long ago going like, oh, I hope he's a one and done.
Yeah. More positives, just Troy Franklin, that dude.
He's a dude.
Chris Hudson had his best performance of the season so far. I think what he had, Eric, 5 catches?
72 yards. Yep,
72 yards. Chase Cota, 784, I believe it was. Dante Thornton had a 42-yard reception. Bucky Irving was really good. They didn't end up using him a lot in the fourth quarter because they just couldn't, but... for the first couple of quarters, especially in the first half, he was just an absolute animal.
11 carries for 81 yards, and then 5 rushes for 38 and a touchdown, and 1 pass for 18 yards. Yes.
Let's have this conversation that you and I talked about.
What's that?
And I think it may have been the second quarter or halftime. Is Bucky Irving the best running back Oregon's had on roster since Royce Freeman?
He certainly passes the eye test.
I don't know the answer to that.
I'm actually curious on feedback on that, because I think it's hard. You know, I liked watching CJ run. I loved the way Travis played last season. Bucky's very unique, and there's more wiggle. There's more break tackle ability and maybe a little bit less home run threat because he hasn't really broken one yet. That doesn't mean he won't, but, I mean, this guy in between the tackles is special. What's that?
He's like a really interesting mix of both Riddell and Dye.
Yeah, a little bit.
He loves contact.
Can break tackles like Riddell, but also wiggle out of them like Dye could. And he's, you know, all like 5'10", 5'11". He's like an actual size running back and not kind of tiny. And he's built like a horse. He's huge.
I love the kid.
I walk away every game watching runs that look, they're 5 yards, 6 yards. And all I can think of is the last... I don't want to throw him under the bus, but all I can think of is last 4 years prior is Verdell running into the backs of his offensive line and missing the hole or not being able to make the jump cut and turning a 3-yard gain into a 6 or 7 or 8-yard gain like we've seen with Bucky. And it's unfair to Verdell. He's a good kid. He He got hurt by injuries.
He had great moments.
Yeah, he had some really big moments. But I just goes back to what Jared said. This offense just feels night and day. And for the first time, unfortunately, for a long time, I think we've said it a couple times now, but there's confidence that this offense can move the ball down the field and score if they get into this type of a situation. I didn't feel like that last year. No. I didn't feel like that in 2020.
That's a lot of confidence.
And in 2019 even with Justin Herbert. And
no.
It comes on a day, not to poke the bowl here, but it comes on a day when Miami gets blown out at home and everyone – and Van Dyke, the next Justin Herbert, as Crystal Ball has kind of labeled, got benched. And it's just – you don't want to poke it. They're not connected at
you
all.
You want to poke it. You like poking it.
We're poking it as we speak.
At the same time, it's seeing a competent offense is a game changer.
Well, so the 624 yards of total offense are the most since 2017, but that was against Southern Utah, and the most since against an FBS team since Markelle Fritch. And so you notice that Chris Will didn't coach any offenses that have had more yards, and this is just game four.
Yeah.
Well, they only had one more yard than Nevada in 2019.
Okay, so it's very, very minor.
Yes.
But
close. Against a non-FBS school.
Yep.
FBS, but not Power 5, Nevada.
Not Power 5, excuse me.
Don't,
sorry, Nevada.
Don't insult Ken Wilson and Kai Arneson. How dare you.
I'm terribly sorry. I feel even worse now. That's Kai.
I just had one final running back thought, and then we should probably talk about some of the defensive stuff. And then we might want to talk about some of the not great stuff, because there was quite a bit of it for a long part of this
that
game.
That kind of goes with the defensive stuff, right?
But some of the offensive stuff, not a good execution. But what I wanted to say was that it's wild we're at this point in a game where we feel so good about the running backs where Byron Cardell doesn't play.
Yeah.
Made the trip, but didn't play. Noah Whittington, by the way, 11 carries, 69 yards. Sneaky stat line. I looked at that and was like, wow, I didn't realize he was that productive. But to me, it feels like this running back rotation is 2 weeks in a row against better competition, and we kind of are seeing what it is. Bucky's your lead guy. Whittington spells him and gets about the same number of carries. They're almost rotating drives for the first half. Jordan James, first touchdown as a Duck, by the way. He's a short yardage guy. That's all he plays. He's only on short yardage downs almost exclusively. And Sean Dollars came in, had three targets.
And I think they're all on third down.
And they're all on third down. That was what I was going to say. Irving and Whittington are going to be your first and second down guys. And if it's short yardage, James comes in. If it's a passing situation, Sean Dollars. I'm sure there's some overlap in terms of the third down stuff, but that's pretty much what it is. So I don't know if it's going to be that way every week. When Cardwell gets back, it might shift around, but
we don't know if Cardwell's hurt or not.
The last two, well, he's been hurt.
He's been hurt, but we don't know if he was clear or not. He suited up. He was here.
But just saying, two games in a row, been a very similar script with the running back, which is kind of notable.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, signature vintage wash sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
What's wrong defensively?
The missed tackles are back, everybody.
Yeah.
It was bad, and I give a lot of credit to Cam Ward.
He's good.
He was really good, and he was very elusive. However, there were a lot of opportunities for Oregon to make a 15-yard gain, a 6-yard gain.
Yep.
And that is a real issue, and they don't track missed tackles here on these stats. Eventually, I don't know how we'll find that information out, but one day it'll pop up on Twitter.
Maybe PFF will have it.
Maybe PFF will have it. Jeffrey Bosa led the way with 9 tackles. Him and Noah Sewell were tied.
Hey, Justin Flo.
Justin Flo is at what?
7?
He had a pretty good game. He didn't play a ton. He was out for a lot of the first half.
No, he played down towards the end of the game.
At the end,
of the game,
he was making plays. Yeah, he had a big play. I'm sorry. So just to – but we don't have missed tackles, but yards after – 358 out of 375 after –
It's very much like the Georgia game.
Can I'm going to be honest here. My mind can't get around this stat
for Robert
Farrell. 8 catches, 50 yards. How does he have 133 yards after contact?
After the catch?
Because it's all screen stuff. But how does he have 83 more yards after contact after?
It's pretty impressive.
After the catch, sorry. But still, after the catch, he has 83 more.
I don't think the math works on that.
I just don't think that works. Sorry, there's a slight digression. I mean, I was trying to look at it going like, but to your point, remember the Georgia thing? That was the thing we pointed to, was how many yards?
Same issues.
Came back.
Yeah, Washington State did the same exact thing that Georgia did, more or less. Just a lot of counters, a lot of slip screens, a lot of in the flats. Oregon did get better at one point, but when they really needed a stop, they physically really couldn't bring down Cam Ward. And he was running free at points. He was also just incredible. In the third quarter, like the Marcus Mariota Michigan State flip pass thing.
Yeah, awesome play.
Unbelievable. I came into this game not knowing what I'd expect from him, and actually that Oregon's defense might do well.
He's good.
He's really good. He's going to be an absolute terror in this Pac-12 for another year. I think he's got one more year until he goes pro, and he should probably go pro.
He's a sophomore. He's got only 2 years of college.
Secondary got picked bad again. Bridges in particular again got picked. I don't know. It's 4 games in. It's a third of the season. I don't know if they have a solution for their problem.
They didn't really play much of Florence or Manning in this game at all on scrimmage plays. They basically relied on him. He did have an interception, which was crucial.
I think Washington State's offense did not stretch the field vertically. And I think the lone...
That's maybe a mistake by their part.
Maybe, but it worked for going in the flats. So for Bridges and Gonzalez, the 2 plays they really got beat deep on were the one where they were looking at the sideline for the play call.
It was bad.
Which was bad. It was basically a replica of the Ohio State issue last year. Mm-hmm. And then the very first play of the game, which was a flea flicker. And
that's right.
So I think Bridges and Gonzalez probably had a good day on paper just because they weren't thrown at. But there were moments where Bridges was actually, he was good. He had his interception. He broke up 2 screen plays. I don't know if he got any tackles for losses for those, but
he had half a tackle for
loss. I thought he was good at points, and same with Gonzalez, but there weren't a lot of moments to really pick on him, but the linebackers.
I just think this is a weird game to look at, because there was like, Washington State could not run the ball at all.
Not at all.
Like, Oregon's run defense is legit, I think. And we know this Washington State run offense isn't great, but like,
still,
they've done a great job. I mean, 25 carries, 53 yards. Some of that is sack stuff where that kind of – it evens out, but it's still probably about 80 yards of total rushing if you take the sack stuff out. Secondary didn't get beat deep, but they got obliterated along with the linebackers and some of that stuff in space and all that screen stuff. And then I asked Lanning about it. I think it's notable. Some really dumb penalties that allowed Washington State to extend their drive twice to 2 scores. They had a kick – catch interference by a freshman. They had a DJ who got piled on and then he reacted, retaliated. And then you had Dorless and DJ again on the next drive, hitting Ward in ways that were deemed.
Which DJ, by the way, gets ejected and will have to, I think, maybe miss the first half.
Someone told me that that rule is gone for the second half. They got rid of it, but I want to have confirmation on that before we.
Yeah.
But either way,
he got ejected.
He had two sacks, his best game.
And it was very evident. I think you, yeah, you asked it. It was very evident Dan was not pleased with the officiating. And he towed the line the best he could because you can't be critical of it because you get fined for it.
You don't have to keep his money.
But he was very pointed about, I'm eager to have some conversation, get feedback of why certain calls were made. You could tell he was not happy with some of these things. And the DJ one in particular, I don't know how you play football if you can't do what he did. He hit him right in the chest.
And not to, because this was an this is a lifetime ago, but the weirdest sequence I've ever seen in a college football, high school football, NFL game.
Screwed. Good Lord.
Where they, we were arguing in the press box like, wait, no, I think that you were like, I think it was fourth down. I was like, I don't know, was there a play? And we were all kind of confused because nothing made sense. And then they reviewed it for 10 minutes. And then they were like, you know what?
After they punted.
You know, Washington State did this punt thing. Let's pretend like that didn't happen. Now it's second down. Let's give them the third down. Let's give them the ball back and let them do this thing. I've never seen anything like it. We asked the NFL scouts who were seated right next to us if you guys seen it. Everyone was like, I don't know what the hell is going on. No one in the press box knew what was going on.
Typical.
And Pac-12. It was one of about 5 moments where you're just like, I don't, what the hell is going on here, guys?
I have an update on the targeting call.
Oh.
The new rules in games that have instant replay, when a targeting foul occurs in the second half, the carryover penalty of sitting out of the first half of the next player's game will be eligible for further appeal.
So they can appeal for it.
The process will begin with a conference submitting a request to the NCAA National Coordinator of Officials, who would review the video of the play. So DJ Johnson will have to.
There's
have
a follow-up. Follow-up for Monday with Dan.
That's going to be awkward with the Pac-12 because they have to submit the request. Did we screw up here, or are we in the clear and some oversight? Why can't this be?
It's ridiculous.
This is stupid. I don't want to go down that path.
Right, but anyway, we'll learn on Monday. Maybe we'll have an answer on Monday from Dan. Because if he does, that lingers a little bit. That's your best pass rusher. And he had two sacks, which maybe gets us to the good defense stuff.
Okay.
Or is there more bad defense stuff?
Well, no, I think we've covered it, or not tackled it, because that's the issue.
That was a problem.
we can jump into the good stuff. Four sacks, 11 tackles for loss. Really, that's pretty darn good.
That surpasses the season totals in any of those stats coming in.
I think all three of us said they'd get more than two sacks in this game, and they didn't. You hit your...
I hit a lot.
You hit DJ on your two.
Can I brag? I think I nailed everything besides the margin, and if Oregon had covered at the end, I would have had a 5-for-5 day.
Very good.
I would have had a 5-for-5 day.
That's Scopel Damas for you.
There you go, guys. I was 0-for-10 to start the year. I'm back.
That's why we pay him the big bucks.
Yeah, pay us some bucks.
So, yeah, Noah Sewell came out and had his... I guess, I don't know what to call it. His breakout game of the season so far, he had 9 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, and a sack.
Which Dan Lanning says he doesn't believe in stats.
Dan did not appreciate my question there.
No, not a stat head.
No. I was like, did Noah have a good game based on the stats that he did? And he was like, I don't really like stats. And I was like, shit, sorry.
Yeah, probably not a baseball fan.
Sorry, sorry, Dan.
It was great. They were able to apply pressure. They had this very interesting scheme for most of the game. They played this 3-3-5 basically with two down linemen and an edge rusher, either DJ James or Mace Buna. Three linebackers. DJ Johnson. We were talking about DJ James earlier. Three linebackers with Jeffrey Bassa, usually Noah Sewell and Justin Flo or LeDuc. You know, three linebackers and 5 defensive backs. And because of how well three linemen or two down and one edge were able to control the running attack for Washington State, they were able to sit in this package all game long. And while it didn't really work tackling-wise, it did work in terms of rushing the quarterback and getting someone free up the middle, whether it's Justin Flo or it's Sewell or it's Jeffrey Bassa off the edge with his speed.
The only problem was they couldn't corral.
They couldn't tackle Ward.
They could not keep contained.
You know who was really frustrated about not tackling the quarterback? Washington State. They had 7 quarterback hits, but no sacks, which is wild.
And that's what we said going into the predictions was that I said they wouldn't give up a sack, and it was because of the escapability.
You nailed that one too.
Of Bo Nix. And I think that just goes. We're on defense, but that just goes to say about his level of play. We are speaking of defense, and the Cougars, we said it was a show-me game for this defense, and
Boy.
Same thing for Oregon. I mean,
yeah.
11 tackles for loss, 4 sacks for the Ducks, more than they've had in a game, more sacks than they've had on the season, I think.
Yeah, all of that was more than everything.
And then on the flip side, no sacks when they had 14 coming into this one in 3 games. They had 30 tackles for loss, and they only got 7 in this one.
7's still good.
7 is still pretty
still
good.
Still a big number. Yeah.
But they also gave up over 600 yards of total offense.
Yes.
Oregon also gave up
29 points in a quarter.
Oregon also gave up 428 yards of offense. Third down defense, which is a stat that Matt had asked Landing about. Why'd you say 5 for 12? That's pretty good. I'll take that.
Under 50%.
It felt worse.
Under 50%.
It did feel worse. I don't know how to feel about Oregon allowing, what was it, 425 yards total offense?
424. Or 428, sorry.
When, like, 90% of it was to one person.
Yeah.
Ward had 375 yards passing. I don't, like, obviously the bad thing is that he had that many yards to begin with, and that Oregon's secondary and middle linebackers were kind of exposed at points, but, again, to allow your opponent to, like, 2 yards a rush or a little under 2 yards a rush is still really damn impressive.
I have one question. We can end it with this if we want.
I have one other thing.
Okay,
go ahead. I
just think we do have to finish at some point talking about some of the negatives. We just talked about defensive ones. The offense in the red zone.
This goes into where I was going.
Was it? Okay, cool.
So good.
Nice. The first half was jarring because Oregon had 321 yards.
Oh,
God, they almost had exactly the same yardage total in both halves. 321, 323. Sorry, I like stats, Dan. Sorry, I'm interested in this. I'm geeking out. But they had 4 drives. All of them went more than 60 yards, I want to say. 65 yards?
At least one of them was 62.
Yeah, I think 62 is the slowest number. And to have 321 yards of offense, no touchdowns, 9 points is really, I think, somewhat of a concern. Obviously, second half, much better. You'd like to see that. I thought some of the play calling was not ideal. There was just some odd choices made. Regardless, execution in the red zone on offense to me is the big takeaway for the offense that needs to improve. The rest of the field, they were incredible. I love the play calling up and down the field, but between just inside like the 10-yard line, things kind of got stymied, got a little ugly. Washington State did a good job in space of making plays, finishing plays, of being aggressive, but I think if I'm coming away with what that's almost only, the only negative I have offensively. They threw the ball. They ran the ball. They caught the passes. They had great quarterback. They protected the quarterback.
Distribution to receivers. They didn't rely on one dude.
Five guys had more than 5 targets, or 5 targets or more. I mean, all sorts of things you love. I just think the one thing was red zone offense in the first half in particular. It was better than the second. That's the one thing on offense. Defense, you've got more concerns, I still think.
The red zone stuff, is it Dillingham being too cute? Because just off the top of my head, the first time they went QB sneak on like a 2nd and 2, which is feels really weird, or 2nd and goal from the 2, which feels really weird. 1st and goal, feels really weird. They did a screen pass,
a tight end screen to McCormick.
And
then a pitch to Winnington to the
to the short side of the field. The second time they were down there, they got a penalty on a false start. That's happening too often. They're putting themselves in tougher situations. They get 5 yards. They face 1st and goal from the 5. They get a 5-yard penalty. They gain 5 yards on the first play on another tight end swing pass. Would have been a touchdown because it would have been 5 yards. And then they, I think they ran the ball twice. And it didn't work. Or they lost a yardage on a screen play, and then they lost yards again on a 3rd down run play. Is it Dillingham being too cute, and you just live with it? Because like Jared said, the offense is phenomenal between the 20s. Or is this a big issue? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's weird. I think in 12 plays inside the 10-yard line, they threw the ball beyond the line of scrimmage once.
In the first half?
Total, in the game. No, twice, because they had the Cam McCormick touchdown.
Right.
That's like the only concern you have with Bo Nix, is they did not try to throw the football towards the end zone when they got inside the 10. When the field got condensed, I don't know if it was Dillingham being too cute or if they don't trust Knicks in that type of a situation. I don't know what the answer is. It's interesting.
I think a third option, just to give some credit to Washington State's defense for being pretty darn impressive in a couple of those early spots in terms of the quarterback sneak. They did it against BYU last week, and it worked. This time, Washington State just blows it up, and they just destroyed that play. And they tried a couple of these screen things, which are working the rest of the field. Washington State, all over it, nothing going there. I think the fact that they kind of relied upon so much screen stuff, I'm with Matt in terms of, like, I would have liked to see them just
run the ball, maybe.
Just run the ball between the tackles. It works. Or throw to Terrence Ferguson, who's been a great red zone target. I don't think he had a target in the red zone.
He had a couple in the game, but not in the red zone.
Yeah.
So he did have a screen pass in the red zone.
He did, you're right, and it was an ugly one. But no, I just think I thought that was the one dicey part for me offensively. And I want to give Washington State some credit. I also think Kenny's an offensive coordinator that's kind of learning this stuff, and I wish we could get an opportunity, because I'd like to pick his brain and kind of...
Yeah. We won't talk to him until December.
Yeah, we're probably not going to... Hey, remember that game in late September? What happened there? Maybe we can ask him how he's evolved as a coordinator in the red zone if it gets better, which I think it will. But I guess I do have some similar questions, concerns on that part of the field for what they were doing.
We have questions and concerns today, and that's because it didn't work for the most part. But I don't think we've had questions or concerns about it before, except maybe after Georgia. And I agree, like, I didn't really like the play calling today. I didn't mind the QB sneak from the two because it worked last week against BYU. It's a tricky play. Washington State blows it up. Washington State did really well side to side inside the 10-yard line, while on the rest of the field they were pretty bad. So I don't blame Kenny Dillingham for going for it on those particular plays. I'm with Matt and Eric, where I would have just liked to have seen Marquise Irving get the ball and try to run it right up the middle.
You've
got to trust your offensive line. However, on the first series where they got back in there, they went jumbo package, and Jordan James got his butt handed to him a couple times. So
that hurt to watch.
They got a throw out of that play, of that formation.
They did. The final touchdown.
For McCormick, yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll be fine. I think after sitting on it, at the very beginning, I thought that this was, Kenny Dillingham, what are you doing? After sitting on it for all of the game, I think Washington State just clamped down. I think that's all they did. I think they clamped down, and Oregon was still 3-for-4 on red zone with Nix's interception there. I thought that was just a bad decision. It was just a bad throw, and that was basically really his only bad throw of the entire game. So can't hate too much there. It's a shame that it went for a pick six and 95 yards and really didn't do well. But, again, you're 3-for-4 if you're Oregon. If you do convert those, all of them, it's 28 to 16, I think it is, if you add all of the stuff in for Washington State. You scored 10 and – was it 10 and 10? No, excuse me, 10 and 7. So it's 28 to 10 if Oregon converts into touchdowns all of those times. So – it's tough to look at from that perspective, but I just think Washington State did really well, and I think it'll be fine moving forward.
I think we can wrap it after this. One other guy deserves a shout-out. I know these weren't long field goals, but Camden Lewis.
Money.
Offensive first-half MVP.
He hit all three field goals. They were all 29 yards or shorter, which is a problem, because that means those drives are ending very close to the end zone.
Which they were.
Hit those field goals, hit the extra points. There's a level of reliability there.
They all look good.
All of them were clean. Like to see that. There's a couple of kickoff stuff, some punting stuff. Maybe we need to talk about in a future podcast. But I thought it was big that he hit those, because if he misses one or here or there, the outcome is different.
We're headed to overtime.
We might be going to overtime. All.
Oregon is now 3-1. They're probably going to move up in the top 25. And as Eric and I heard on the postgame show from Washington State, as we were walking up here to the press box, the question again, just how impressive. Maybe people are overlooking Oregon because of how good Georgia really is, but they're averaging like 50 points, 52 points a game when they're not playing Georgia. They're averaging over 500 yards of total offense when they're not playing Georgia. This offense is night and day. It's good to see. And if they can just shore up a couple things defensively, they could make that jump from being a pretty good team to a pretty darn special team. And that's what's going to, you know, be the question moving forward, is can they clean up some of these missed tackles? Can they develop a little bit more consistent of a pass rush? Because the offense is there for them to be pretty good. Exciting game. We'll have more of it on DuckTerritory.com. We'll have Eric's game stories already up. We're going to have video reactions. We'll have some sidebars as well on DuckTerritory.com. So check it out. And until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.